Oh, that's right. I'm Ann Eller, right back here with you this morning. I have one of my favorite congressmen on the line with us here this morning. He has the ability just to put those little zingers out there that I just really appreciate, and I just want to play one short one from it. This was from an interview he was doing with that Parks guy, the you know, the one that made the website. Here you go.
Don't short yourself. You're the smartest one in the room.
Well, that's not true, sir.
Trust me, I've been in this room for a while. It is true.
Congressman Trey Gowdy, how do you think of this stuff?
I don't know. Probably sitting in a courtroom with nothing else to do for 16 years. You got a lot of time to think, I guess.
Well, I tell you what. Did you ever think when you went to Washington that you'd be still in that same role?
I did not. I would have been more excited about it if I'd known that I could use some of what I did in my old job. I had no idea what it would be like. Tim and Mick and Jeff did a great job of trying to prepare me, but the committee hearings are actually the most enjoyable part of the job in D.C., much more so than the rest of it. I love the committee. I'm on four committees. That's a lot for a member of Congress. I think seven subcommittees, but that's my favorite part of being up there.
Absolutely. And I also, I know you were talking about the Affordable Care Act when you were talking about the train wreck, but gosh, you really could say that about Washington in general, couldn't you?
A train wreck may be complimentary. Train wrecks don't even do some of the things to you that we seem to do to ourselves. It's dysfunctional. If I were not up there, if I were watching it, like most of your listeners, I might be tempted just to give up, just to wash my hands and say it doesn't matter. I would tell your listeners it does matter, that the members of Congress I serve with care very much what the people they work for think. But there is a disconnect between what happens in Washington and what happens in Main Street, South Carolina, and we got to find a way to get that fixed.
You know, the budget deal came through, and of course, y'all voted on it in Congress yesterday. Did you vote for the budget deal?
I did not. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, and I know he's been criticized a little bit lately. Paul Ryan is every bit as smart as he was this time last year when he came up with one of the best budgets any of us have ever seen. Nevertheless, I wasn't able to support it. And most of the folks from South Carolina were not able to support it. In our judgment, you know, we had the sequester locked in. As we were reminded during the government shutdown, the Affordable Care Act is the law. That's what we heard. It's the law. You have to fund it. Well, sequester's the law, too. So why are we changing that law? I know the reason. The reason is to provide some relief to the Department of Defense and to avoid any debate over a shutdown for the next 12 months. I just thought on the margins we could have gotten a better deal. I don't offer that as a criticism of Paul, whom I like very much. I just wasn't able to support it.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't seem like, and of course, John Boehner was very upset with you guys that didn't support it.
Well, I think he's more upset with the outside groups. And when I say outside groups, there are some conservative groups. The last couple of days, he's been more outspoken with respect to his relationship with them. But in all of my dealings with John Boehner, he has told me to vote my conscience, vote my district, just don't surprise me. And what he means by that is if you tell him ahead of time, look, the people I work for don't support this. He's never frowned. He's never twisted my arm. We've had some conversations. He's tried to point out, you know, things that he thought might be persuasive. But I think what he's really upset with is if you think about going into 2014, and you're a Republican and you're trying to retake the Senate, you're going to have to fight against Harry Reid. You're going to have to fight against the Democrats and Pelosi. You're probably going to have to fight against the mainstream media. you're going to have to fight against the fact that people are just kind of sick and tired of politics. Do you really want to fight among yourselves? If Boehner were on the radio with you, that's what he would say. It's one thing to have, you know, family conversations where you disagree, but when I was growing up, I have three sisters, Ann, and my father made it very clear, you don't discuss family business outside the house. You can do what you want inside the house, but outside the house, you present a unified front. I think if John were on the phone with you, he would say, I don't mind the fights. I wish we fought with the same vigor against the other side as we do against ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, do you think that there is going to be a continuation of this, I'll use the word supposedly because I don't really, not sure I believe in it, working together moving forward on the budget?
No.
Okay.
No, this is you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. From the Republican perspective, the Affordable Care Act has been such an utter unmitigated disaster that our best prospects for doing well in 2014 are just to let people get to know the Affordable Care Act better. We don't really have to do anything other than, you know, people blame the website. That's the best thing the Democrats have going for them right now is that you can't get on the website, because once you do get on, you're going to find out that you were lied to. So we want to focus on that. And the Democrats, you know, if Nancy Pelosi were to call into your show, she would want all of your listeners to think that the House Republicans can't wait to shut down government again. So what do the Republicans get? There's not going to be any discussion of the shutdown between now and next year, next November. And from a Republican perspective, the more attention we can focus on the scandals, NSA, this abysmal foreign policy that our country has, and the Affordable Care Act, the best chance the Republicans have for retaking the Senate.
I talked to Senator Lindsey Graham last week, and we had some of the same type of conversation as far as where the Republicans are, as far as how they plan to go next year and how to retake the Senate, for example. But one of the things that is amazing is how much on the back burner all these other scandals have become. Are they going to come back around after the first of the year, Trey?
They are, but I got to say this, and some of them, I wholeheartedly understand why your listeners may think they're on the back burner, because they're certainly not on the front pages of the newspaper, and they're not leading off the newscast. But with respect to Benghazi and the IRS targeting scandal, there are depositions and witness interviews that have been going on all along. They are not public yet. They are not. We're not having hearings on them. The work is still being done. In fact, less than a week ago, Chairman Issa and Jason Chaffetz and I sat down with another committee, Armed Services, because they have a portion of the Benghazi investigation with respect to the military. And we had a very frank, productive, about 1 hour meeting, just sitting around a conference table of what are you going to do? What are we going to do? What's the plan come January? There are witness interviews. Some people call them depositions. There are depositions that are going on even as we speak. So I do not fault people for thinking that they're on the back burner. In terms of public attention, they are. In terms of work being done, there's a congressman named Jimmy Jordan from Ohio, and Jimmy has taken the lead on the IRS targeting scandal. I could fashion an argument that there is more being done on that right now than there was in the height of the summer and early fall when people were focused on it. It's just not public. So I would tell your listeners, don't think we've forgotten about it, even though you're not reading about it. They're still investigating going on.
Well, that sure is good to hear. And on Benghazi, do you think, you know, knowing something and proving something as a prosecutor, I know you know, are two different things. Do you think eventually you will be able to prove the case that y'all are making on Benghazi?
It depends, and it depends on this. If we're going to get access to all of the witnesses, then yes. We can tell your listeners and our fellow citizens what happened with a certain degree of specificity. If we are continued to be denied access to the names and the witnesses, particularly military witnesses, it is very awkward for military witnesses to testify in what some are going to contend to be a political issue or political question. I do not view Benghazi as being political, but you know our colleagues on the other side of the aisle claim that that's all it is. It's politics towards Hillary Clinton. So if you're a soldier that's sworn an oath to defend the country, you don't really want to get involved in a political squabble. But we need those witnesses, and we just need them to tell us what happened. We'll figure out the politics of it. You just tell us, were you told to stand down? Were you told to sit down? That's the biggest component that we're missing right now. We know the security was inadequate. We know that Hillary Clinton blew it in terms of reviewing the security. And we know that Susan Rice made up a fable on the back end. What we really need to put our attention on is during the siege itself, where were our military assets? Why were they not called? Why didn't the president call our allies in the region? And that's going to require us talking to military folks. And that is more delicate than bringing in a State Department person. Women and men in uniform, one of the reasons they go into it, I assume, is because they love the country, but they don't love politics. And so we're trying to be sensitive to that. I do think eventually, if Hillary Clinton is serious about auditioning to be the commander-in-chief, which I believe she is, then she's going to have to answer more questions. You can't just go on a love fest tour around the country and not answer anybody's questions. I seriously get asked tougher questions in the Bojangles drive-thru than she's been asked by the media about her role in Benghazi.
Yeah, and to make a comment, what difference does it make? It just rankles me, and I will remember that forever, I think.
Well, and even if you do forget it, you're going to see that clip a lot between now and 2016 and 2018.
Sure. So the case on Benghazi, you're telling us, is moving forward. Now, one of our listeners, I told them you were coming on, they wanted to know why a special prosecutor has not been appointed in this.
Well, that's a great question. Many of us would love to see more special prosecutors appointed. A special prosecutor denotes a criminal act as opposed to a political act. And, of course, the executive branch handles the prosecution. We saw with Fast and Furious. We have seen with the HHS rollout. This administration is just not going to investigate or prosecute itself. They're just not going to. They haven't done it with respect to any of these scandals. So if you want somebody brought before a grand jury, if you want charges filed, I mean, look at Lois Lerner. I mean, Lois Lerner, there's no special prosecutor in that case. In fact, we can't even tell you what the FBI is doing. I like the FBI, but they need to come tell Congress what they're doing on the criminal side. Congress can't indict. Congress can't prosecute. Congress can't put people in prison for crimes. We can provide oversight. We have the power of contempt, and we have the power of the purse. So, you know, there's only one way to appoint a special prosecutor, because there's only one statute that authorizes it, and the attorney general is just not going to do it. So if you want an attorney general who would be more likely to do it, we need to work pretty hard between now and November 2016.
Are you saying we need a Republican back in the office?
Well, you know what? I would love, and I hope I live long enough to see this.
Yes.
I would love to see a Republican Congress providing oversight over a Republican Attorney General and a Republican President. Because the reality is, I don't care what party you're a member of, the executive branch is not more powerful than the other two branches of government. And they shouldn't be above the law, whether it's immigration, mandatory minimums, the failure to prosecute contempt cases. I think, you know, and I'm speaking to Republicans now, Republicans would have more credibility with independent voters if we were tough on our own guys, too. You can't just wait until the other team has the ball to decide that you're going to play defense. You got to do it against your own team, too. Mm-hmm. And I would love to live long enough to be able to ask, you know, tough but fair questions of a Republican attorney general.
Well, Trey, you know, we're very fortunate to have you up there. And I got to ask you a question. I'm going to just pivot and change the subject totally. I noticed, I think it was on the 10th, you had some facial hair. And then on the 13th, you didn't have the facial hair. Are you trying for a new look, or are you trying to get best facial hair? I'm a little confused.
Here's what happens. The farther I am away from home, the more likely I am not to shave. But if I want to sleep indoors in Spartanburg, which I do because it's cold, then I have to shave. So, you know, Jeff Duncan didn't shave for the month of November. I saw how bad he looked, and I didn't want him to be alone. So every now and again, I know I'm too old to do things like that, but some days I wake up and I decide I don't want to, and then you never know, on a Sunday morning, your wife can look at you kind of sternly, and you know it's time to shave. So that's kind of how I do it, based on my wife's disposition.
It's good to know who's in control, Trey.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Well, listen, you know what? I always appreciate you coming on the show and talking about the issues with me. I know that I have one question I want to ask you as we finish up here. What's your feeling for next year? Optimistic, pessimistic? Where's our country headed? Because you know what? This whole issue in Washington is affecting all the things that are happening on the home front, whether it's a business for Christmas, whether it's families with their budgets. But what do you see since you're up there in Washington?
Well, on the plus side, even for folks who don't like the budget deal that was negotiated, and of course I voted no, and most of the rest of the guys did too that I hang around with, there will be certainty. There's not going to be this constant, you know, national news obsession with a shutdown. So if you like certainty in terms of you know, we think you're spending too much, but at least you've taken some of the uncertainty out of it, Paul's budget deal provides certainty. You may be certain that it's bad, but it at least provides certainty. With respect to the Affordable Care Act, it's going to get worse. It's going to continue to get worse. And so the economic climate, I think, from a certainty standpoint, will be better. From an impact on job creation, people are still going to be reluctant to expand with this administration in power, whether it's EPA regulations, health care. There's just going to be a reluctance to expand with this administration. You know, we have both of our senators are on the ballot in 2014. The governor's on the ballot, all the members of Congress. So I'm not going to be naive. And I think politics is probably going to dominate more than governing in 2014 because it's an election year. Almost everybody except the state senators is on the ballot. That doesn't mean you can't do your job. It just means politics is, you know, right around the corner in terms of the midterm elections. And that's good. You know, if the Senate switches to Republican, then you're going to see the rules used differently. Tim, I think, was up all night. I'm sure Lindsey was, too, voting on these nominees because Harry Reid invoked a nuclear option, which a couple of years ago he thought would have been the worst thing in the world, but I noticed he's changed his mind. So, unfortunately, you're going to see politics because it's an even-numbered year, but you're also going to see a little more economic certainty in that there's not going to be this constant obsession with a shutdown.
Well, I guess if there's a little ray of hope, then that's it, right?
The ray of hope is that Kim Jong-un, I believe his name is, whoever Kim Jong-il's son is now running North Korea, just executed his uncle.
Yeah.
You look in China, you look at the asylum rates of people trying to come to this country. I am not minimizing the problems that we have, but I would rather have our problems than anybody else's problems in the world. And we're still blessed to live in the greatest country that's ever been devised. We got to get a lot of things fixed, but I'd rather be fixing them here than anywhere else.
I echo your response there, but I also think we have to be very, very vigilant that we don't lose the things that we have had for over 200 years.
And we are at a really defining point, which is why, if you want to win, and I'll go back to being in a courtroom, you have to persuade. And I need to do a better job of persuading people who are either undecided or apathetic towards politics. I got to give them a reason to think that if we trust you guys again, it'll be different. And that's a steep burden of persuasion. There's a lot of cynicism and skepticism, and I share it. But to change the country, we got to change who's running it. And to change who's running it, I have to be more persuasive in terms of how I interact with my fellow citizens.
Well, I think you do a terrific job, Trey, and I appreciate you so much coming on the air with us. Let me tell you, I wish you a Merry Christmas, and I hope it's a Happy New Year for all of us. Congressman Trey Gowdy, thanks so much for calling
us
today.
Merry Christmas, and God bless you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.